listening to Right On Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at KFAI.org. I'm Liz Olds. This is the second week of Right On Radio's exciting new collaboration with the Autoptic Graphic Arts Festival. Autoptic is a Twin Cities-based arts festival focusing on comics, zines, and print media. And this fall on KFAI, Right On Radio is collaborating with the Autoptic team and the Gutter Boys podcast to present interviews with some of Autoptic's most exciting guests as a limited series. We want to thank Pete Fahey and the Autoptic board for making this possible.
Tonight, Pete Fahey, local cartoonist and Autoptic organizer, interviews Madeline McGrain, graphic novelist and cartoonist who has worked for Marvel Comics, Disney Publishing, and College Humor, and is currently working on a graphic novel for HarperCollins. Without further ado...
I'm Pete Fahey, Autoptic board member and cartoonist, and I'm joined today by Madeline McGrain. Madeline is a cartoonist best known for her mini comics in the vampire genre. She lives in Minneapolis and received her BFA from MCAD in 2016. Her work has appeared in Marvel Comics, Disney Publishing, College Humor, and Minneapolis local Uncivilized Books. Madeline is currently working on The Accursed Vampire, an original graphic novel to be published by HarperCollins in 2021. Welcome. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. Working, living, hanging in there.
Yeah, yep. Relatable. I think we're all just trying to work and live and hang in there. I guess we'll just let people know. So we both went to MCAD, and that's how we know each other. And we met in class, I think. We had a lot of the same classes together. Me and M.S. Harkness, who I also interviewed, we didn't really have that relationship. We were studio partners, but me and you actually had a lot of the same classes and were involved in a lot of the same critiques and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely had senior project together. I don't remember any other class well enough.
You know, you might be right. I came in a little bit later. I was doing some of the intro classes, I think, when you and Rosemary and some of the other people that were in our graduating class were starting to move on. I was kind of doing some of the intro stuff. But by the end, yeah, we were definitely seeing a lot of each other.
And like senior project is kind of the most important and memorable. At least it was for me. I don't know if you feel that way.
Yeah, that and whatever that one that comes before it, that's basically the same class.
Advanced,
that's just like the prep
seminar
for senior project. Yeah, whatever that was. Yeah. Yeah, I felt the same way. I thought those were really good. And I really enjoyed having class with you. And I think we had some really strong cartoonists in that in our graduating class there. Nice to work alongside you guys.
Yeah, it was a good group. And it was... I don't know. I valued how much you would talk during critique. That was like never one of my strong points. And I always got a lot of good feedback from you on my vampire Western that I was working on.
Yeah. Yep. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Well, I appreciate that. I got to try to not talk so much today because, you know, I got a lot to say on pretty much anything. Even if it's not worth it, I'll be talking. So, but we're talking to you today, so I gotta watch it and let you do your thing. So we're both from Wisconsin. I'm from Madison, a little further south. I think you were north of me. Is that right?
No, I am actually grew up south of Madison. So I was born in Madison.
Oh, okay.
And then grew up in Monroe, in the Monroe area. It's a small town known for a biennial cheese festival. Probably haven't heard of it. I don't know.
Sure. Monroe sounds familiar, but I think that's just like a common word in Wisconsin. I don't know. So it was a pretty small town then. I do have that part of my memory is right.
Yeah, small town.
What were comics like when you were growing up out there? Was there like any kind of, you know, I kind of got them in like school libraries and public libraries, and I think that was sort of my first interactions. But what was your experience finding comics as a kid?
So I first started reading like newspaper strips, which I think is pretty common, like in the newspaper. And my parents just had collections of like Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side.
Yeah, which, that was a big one.
So I read those like all the time. And then, yeah, definitely like the public library. I was homeschooled, so I didn't really have access to school libraries. The public library, like weird manga collections. And I mean, there wasn't like a comic book store like within 50 miles, well, 40 miles. So I would just go and read like Naruto at the library.
Huh. I don't know if I knew that that was out yet. I remember me and my brother like getting into like Battle Angel Alita and stuff when we were in like third and fourth grade, and like kind of gnarlier, some of the gnarlier stuff. He especially was like really into that one. So what were your favorites as a kid then? You were talking about Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side and some of the manga stuff. Were you a Tintin kid?
I was absolutely not a Tintin kid.
Interesting.
I have read a little bit of it as an adult. I think like the version that the library had was like that print where it's like really small and just like not very fun to read. So I was like picked it up and was like, no, this is too small to look at.
I wasn't into it when I was young at all either. I love it now. And I always kind of assume that you were a Tintin kid because your stuff feels so European to me. But so what were you reading instead?
Pretty much an all manga kid until like later in high school. So like Naruto, Fullmetal Alchemist, that's like the extremely basic ones that I can remember, and just like
they were super accessible. Yeah, super accessible comics growing up. Okay, interesting. So where go ahead.
Clamp, like Cardcaptor Sakura, and many of their other mangas, they were just like always like scattered volumes of various things available to check out. And I like wouldn't always like read a whole series. It just finding things.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how I did it too. I really steered away from superhero stuff because I remember like the Bruce Timm Batman cartoon was huge for me. And I remember going to pick up some Batman comics and seeing like a naked breast or like somebody bleeding or something, and just like put the book back as like a little kid and was just like, so I wasn't supposed to see that, you know? Like,
oh no.
Yeah. You didn't have any of those experiences.
I watched like the X-Men cartoon, and like I loved the X-Men movies that were coming out then, those ones. And but there was just like really no way to like jump off into reading those comics. So I didn't.
Yeah. 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 That's a similar experience. I'm interested in this question because you got like, there's such a legend for like a generation or two of cartoonists above us where like they all have these like stories of like going to the corner store and like picking up the Archie, and like, you know, comics were like really specifically for kids, but we're, you know, mid late 20s and we had a really different experience with comics growing up. That kind of market that's so nostalgic for comics and kids' relationships to comics didn't really exist when we were growing up. I was curious if you had any of that in the small town, though, but it sounds like it was pretty similar.
Yeah,
to my experience.
Yeah, I feel like our generation's experience is like reading manga, like either illegally online or like in Borders and then not buying it.
Yeah,
just, like, reading it and
on
the
Borders.
Yeah, RIP.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, totally. I remember sitting there and reading the whole first volume of Hellsing and putting it back and walking out.
Yeah, I would just like get left there, like if my mom had errands to run in Madison, and I would just like read and then not buy anything and go home.
So when did you start drawing comics? And were you pretty young when you started, or did that come later?
Yeah, I was always like kind of an art kid. Like drawing was kind of the only thing that I was good at. like I wasn't good at writing. I wasn't particularly good at school related things. So I kind of put all my energy into that. And I liked telling stories, but I hated writing and I still don't love writing. So comics was kind of like a natural conclusion to that. Some like huge epic comic that I was like working on in middle school or something, but I did like make like one page comics pretty frequently.
Sure. And that was like around middle school or earlier?
Yeah, like middle school and then into high school, and I like got more serious about it.
Okay. Yeah, so then how does that turn into the decision to major in comics at MCAD? Because that's like, I feel like we got that in common where we're both lifers in that way, where like when you go to school for comics, you're making a very specific decision about what to do with your future, you know? And it's kind of a weird decision to make in some ways.
Yeah, like it's a pretty wild decision to be allowed to like make at age 17.
Yeah.
I think I like started applying to art schools with the intention of going into animation because that was like regarded as a slightly more like viable career than comics. But I like cartoons, but I don't like them enough to like really get into animation, I think, in the end. So I like went to MCAD and thought about being an animator and then just like went into comics because it's what I love and like what I want to be reading all the time and what I want to be doing all the time.
I had a really similar experience. The other thing about comics too is you just, you can do it all by yourself, right? You don't need a production team and you don't need, you know, you can do that with animation too, but you can get a comic done a lot faster if you're working alone.
Oh, definitely. Like you're not putting weeks of work into like a 1 minute animation. It's just, and like maybe I'm not a good team player, maybe I think I kind of like just like doing everything on my own, and that's like been an interesting thing with the graphic novel. Like it's good to have input from another person, but I like it's a lot to get used to like have other people giving me feedback when I normally would just be like,
so you're
not me.
Right. So you're talking about working with an editor then?
Yes.
With getting feedback. Right. Yeah, that'd be a new experience. Yeah. How's that been? That's how much feedback are they giving you? Are they pretty hands-on or are you mostly doing your own thing and then just kind of getting notes?
Mostly doing my own thing, and like my editor is so helpful and like pointing out if I'm like just like inconsistent or like not explaining things. And also like the graphic novel is for a middle grade audience. So sometimes I will like put things in there that might not be considered appropriate and like they don't really need to be there. So I can make the decision to take them out if they're like not necessary for the story, just to like make my life easier, I guess.
Yeah, I assumed, because you sent me the first chapter of the upcoming book, which, again, is The Accursed Vampire. So you sent me the first chapter of that, and I noticed the conspicuous lack of scenes of them actually drinking the blood. It's always like just after, and you've got a little bit in there, but it's always just after, and they're like dabbing with a napkin or something instead. I assume that was kind of coming from the editor and working with the middle grade audience.
Yeah, that was like my choice mostly.
Sure.
I wasn't sure if it would be okay to like show the children like biting people so they don't really.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I was a little bit surprised with the blood at all. I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that.
I hope it's okay. We'll see.
Yeah. Maybe they haven't said anything about it.
Get banned and I'll, I don't know. ostracized from society.
Well, you'll be in some good company there. Well, we're already starting to talk about vampires a little bit here. So my next question here is this obligatory, and I apologize in advance because I know that this is something you've already been asked a lot, and it's something that you're going to be asked for the rest of your career. But I feel like we can't not do it, right? So here's our obligatory best vampire stories question, which I guess, you know, we can use this to kind of talk about how that became a thing for you, because this is very specific. And in the, you know, 4 or 5 years that I've known you, you've worked almost exclusively in this genre. And so, you know, clearly you have this very specific connection to it. But yeah, best stories and I guess kind of where this came from.
That is a good question. And I always feel like I don't really have a good answer for it. I wasn't like a horror or vampire obsessed like kid or anything. I think probably like consumed about as much vampire media as anyone else. And then like, I don't know, mid high school, I read like Anne Rice a little bit, and that was like pretty influential. Yeah, like Interview with the Vampire is a big like influence on a lot of people that like vampires. And I don't know, I personally love it. It's like kind of a problematic fave at this point. Like Anne Rice is a very, I don't know, strange figure as like an author. But
I don't know any of the details here. I saw the movie. I think I have a VHS copy of it in my apartment right now, but I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, I mean, Brad Pitt and Antonio Banderas like almost kiss, so that's like pretty great. The rest of the movie is, you know, Tom Cruise in a wig.
It's got the drama, though. It really does have that piece of overlap with your work where you're doing vampires, but you're more just kind of showing people's lives under extreme circumstances. And it's got that real emotional core to it.
Yeah. And I think when I make vampire stories, they're like almost always told from the perspective of a vampire. Like it's not like a horror story about people like, and then there are vampires. It's like a vampire like going about their life. So it's like very much from the perspective of that.
Yeah. And then on your website, all the comics we're going to be talking about are from your website. And you've done a great job of cataloging your stuff there, which I thank you for, because I misplaced a lot of your hard copies. I have to dig them up. I can't find my Ice Heist or anything, which
I'm
bummed about. But I'm going to pull your website up here and make sure that I get the right title here. Yeah, the oldest one on your website here, The Old Friends. So that one, you're talking from the perspective of a human interacting with a vampire, but it's very similar where, to me, that comic felt like it was really about dealing with loss and sort of using this genre as a way to explore these like very, very human, I guess, very mortal concerns, you know. This one is her friend dies and then comes back as a vampire, and it's sort of, that's the crux of that one. That's an older one. Do you remember working on that one?
I do. I made it like not for a class assignment during like first semester of junior year, which was like the most hellish semester at MCAD for me. And it was just so refreshing to make this comic because I was like taking so many classes and not like making comics for them at that time. That comic, it's like, it's about loss and it's about like losing touch with someone and then like still being able to find something in common with them and find them. And yeah, that's like a lot of what my vampire comics are about. It's like,
yeah,
being an outsider or like feeling like an outsider and just like kind of accepting who you are and like the limitations that you have.
Yeah, interesting. There's, I think that kind of speaks to one of the other questions that I have here, which is the appeal of genre in general, because from seeing you develop as a cartoonist and in school, my memories are that you were pretty much always working within genre, like traditional genre. So you're doing like vampire stuff. You've got your vampire Western. I think when we were in school, you would do the occasional espionage comic. I don't know if you've done as much of that publicly since, but and you know, my stuff is very genre based as well, so I've got my own ideas about this, but do you want to talk about the appeal of genre a little more?
Yeah, I think like we've actually talked about this before, that it has like this established language that you can kind of like rely on to a certain point, and like you've got these like signifiers about what's going on, so it's like something for a reader to like grasp onto really quickly and understand what you're trying to say without like as much legwork. And it's just like working within like existing stories to like make new things.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking about that in relation to autobio the other night too, because it's like in autobio, the genre is like real life, you know, like we all know the rules of real life. So it kind of does that legwork too. But it's just like when you have, you know, the Western, we all like know what the rules of the Western are. So the rules of how this thing works are all out of the way and you can just tell your story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. So kind of staying along this line, do you want to talk about the experience of doing and kind of being known for one thing? Is this just my perspective where it's like you're the vampire cartoonist, or is this sort of a wider thing? Is this really what you're known for?
Yeah, this is what I'm known for. And like I show up at conventions and like every comic on my table is about vampires.
Yeah, okay,
and like,
cool.
It usually says in like whatever social media bio I have that I like vampires. So it has become like what I'm known for.
Yeah, so how does that work for you?
I think it's fun. Like other people that are into vampires will like immediately recognize vampires and like be excited to see something about vampires. I also like am asked if I have like an opinion on like any vampire comic or book or movie, and like sometimes I don't have an opinion and sometimes I've never heard of it. And then like everyone asks me if I've seen What We Do in the Shadows, and like of course I've seen it. Like
It's good or it's bad? What do you?
It's good. It's really fun. It's very
yeah,
cute.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah. I saw it in theaters, so like I've seen
it. We're done talking about it.
It's okay.
Okay. Oh, jeez.
Do you find it limiting in any way? Do you feel like you do you feel yourself feeling boxed in at all ever, or do you think you've got enough of a sandbox here to work on?
I don't feel limited by it. Sometimes I think I'm better at like making vampire comics and that like not good enough at other things to like make other kinds of stories, or that like people that like my vampire work won't necessarily like anything else that I do. But like when I get client work, if I'm like working with a writer or something, it's never vampire stuff, like paid to make anything about vampires and tell this graphic novel. I guess
is like, that a relief when you get to do something else, or are you just kind of like, all right, we'll get this shit out of the way and then I can get back to vampires?
Very much the second one. Before the graphic novel,
sure.
Like all of my client work was like get the bills paid. Like I wasn't super attached to anything. It was just like it was a job. It was like clocking in and drawing some things.
Well, it's interesting to me too that you say you don't feel like you're strong in other kinds of comics. You have the one on your website about the wildfire, this like big historic wildfire in Wisconsin, and I thought that one for me actually kind of like really captured what I think is so good about your work, and that you've taken this natural event and personified it and made that thing relatable. And I think you do that really well. And that comic was kind of a thrill for me too, because I feel like I'm like seeing something I'm not supposed to see when you're like publishing something that's not vampires. But yeah, that's interesting that you have those concerns.
Oh, that's really great to hear about the Peshtigo Fire comic. I haven't thought about that in a while because I made it for an anthology like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's a beautiful comic. I think the way you've put your figures together in that is really fantastic. It's beautiful line work on there, and then your colors are excellent as always. So do you have any ideas on where your style comes from? Because I mentioned earlier, you feel like you have these very European sensibilities to me, and I think I've said this to you before. Talking about what you're reading as a kid, and maybe we could talk about more of what you're reading now as part of this. But do you have any ideas of where this specific style is coming from? Because it sounds like you were not necessarily reading stuff that looks like this.
My style like changed very, very significantly, probably like before we met and like started reading each other's comics in class. So like before MCAD, I was like reading, I don't know, whatever like popular Image comics were coming out at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good. They're fine. But I wanted to draw like that. Like I wanted my work to look like that. And then like I got to MCAD and like was told to read like Isaac the Pirate and the Rabbi's Cat and like Miss Don't Touch Me. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to draw exactly like this. And that's what I do. So that was like pretty recent in the scheme of things.
Well, that put some pieces together for me, because in the time that I've known you, you've been like an exceptionally consistent cartoonist. And I guess I just assume that you've always been that way.
No, not at all. I just saw something I liked and then I was like, I'm doing this now.
Sure. So is that more of what you're reading lately? Is it more of this sort of European Isaac the Pirate kind of stuff? Or what are you reading these days?
That's a really, really good question. I kind of read everything. Like, I keep up with whatever Kara Squad is publishing, because they're...
Say that again? I don't think I've ever heard of them.
Kara Squad, like, Beauty, Beautiful Darkness, Miss Don't Touch Me.
Yeah, this is all stuff I've never heard of.
Well... should look them up. Very, very clean.
Yeah, send me
a
link.
Cool, very cartooning. I will send you a link. I reading some manga, reading Beastars, the like furry high school manga. That's kind of like the most recent thing. I really haven't been reading a lot of comics.
Yeah. I have taken kind of a break too, I think, with all of the uprisings and shutdowns and all of the fluctuations going on outside. I've found it more difficult to read lately.
Yeah, I just kind of like am not in the mood, I guess, to like seek out things and like get really excited about them. So if I am reading something, it's just to like turn my brain off at night. It's not to like think about it.
Yeah, I got a like old pulp magazine of true crime stuff from like 1951 that I've been reading at bedtime. Just exactly that, just something to turn your brain off. So going back a little bit, when you were talking about feeling like you didn't have a very good answer for how you got into drawing vampire comics, I'm curious, so do you have this experience of like this thing kind of chose you versus you chose it?
Yeah, that describes it pretty well. I made one vampire comic for a class at MCAD, and it was like, it just like felt right. And it was like a bunch of things clicked, and I just like wanted to keep telling stories about vampires.
So when you drew that comic and it was clicking and it was feeling right, did you have like a really positive reaction from your peers at that moment too?
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm asking, I was just reading like a history of like turn of the century newspaper comics, and the thing that they like are so fixated on in that era is like, is the comic a hit? And so I've started stretching that out into like our own indie stuff and our own indie sensibilities, and you know, finding ways that like the thing hit, you know. Emma, when I was talking to MS Harkness, she's talking about the first time she did Autobio, everybody was like, oh cool, so she had like this little hit there, and it turned into this whole process.
I don't think, like, I didn't get a great response from my class. I don't think, yeah, I didn't have like a lot of like great responses from my classes, I think, in my early MCAD years. And then like, I think my vampire comics did start getting like a little bit more attention on the internet, which is always like I love getting attention on the internet.
Oh my God, it's the best.
So that was like a great response. And like, that also kind of keeps me going. Like, I kind of don't like admitting that, just like getting that hit of likes if I post a comic.
Right. Well, I mean, it's one of the reasons I think that's super interesting to hear. And to me, it's just sounding like you're like a thorough, like, through and through weirdo, where you're just gonna fucking show up and do your thing and try to find a way to get everybody to like what you're doing versus the other way around, which I love. It's kind of one of the reasons that I'm so excited to be talking to you today and interviewing you, is I feel like you've been so consistent and so good and so under talked about, and I was kind of assuming maybe that was a little bit of my perception too, but it's sounding like you've kind of experienced that, and it's not always like people are talking about what you're doing. But I think, you know, in the time that I've known you, everything I've seen from you has been fantastic. I do think you're starting to hit now. I mean, you got the HarperCollins book coming up, so.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm coming to my stride. I'm popular online. I've got everything I ever wanted.
Everybody loves you. Yeah. Yep.
Book deal, money. But yeah, I mean, I guess to answer that, like, if I was the only person in the world and I just would, like, I would probably still draw comics just for me. Like, if I somehow, like, was the only person that existed and somehow knew what comics were, because, like, that's how much I love them.
Yeah. And that's kind of where my idea for this question about deciding to go major in comics comes from, is I get that sense from you. I really do get that sense from you as a creator.
And yeah, it feels good. It feels validating to like get attention for my work and like be paid pretty well to like make the book that I absolutely want to be making. If I was like lived in obscurity, I would still be making comics, probably not as often, but I would.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wonder about that with myself sometimes, because I rely on that, like, you know, the gratification from likes, and I, you know, I'm like constantly terrified that I'm like some fucking hack that is like, you know, doing hacky work and is no good, and I need people to tell me that it's good so that I know that I should keep going, you know. I wonder about that with myself.
Yeah. And I like to like trace this back to my childhood, and like, I mean, I got, people praised me for drawing well, like adults and like other children. So I just am, I like still that like little kid that just like wants to be told I'm the best at drawing.
I mean, I think we probably all are, you know. It's well documented that there's not a lot of money in this business, and you know, we stick with it anyway. I'm glad you got the books coming, and I'm glad you're getting paid, and I'm glad that's working out and that you don't have to be scraping quite as much, although, you know, I'm sure it's not a ton of money on the book deal, all things considered.
It's like so much more than I've ever been paid for anything, but it like works out to like a pretty like entry level salary at like any other job, but it's still like, it's great. And I hope I can continue doing this.
I hope so too. And I want to see your work continue to hit and spread and people put some money behind it. Well, we're kind of talking about the graphic novel a little more here. Do you want to talk about, just kind of walk us through getting work with Marvel and Disney and College Humor, and then ultimately how that leads into working with HarperCollins?
Yeah, I don't know if like anything directly led to anything. Like when I was working with Disney, I was like assisting, like I was doing flats for someone else's graphic novel. And that's how I met my agent. And then she was like very helpful in getting a book deal for me and like kind of like guiding me in making a book pitch, making the proposal, which I didn't, despite taking classes at MCAT, I did not really know how to put together a book proposal. So I think she was like crucial in like being able to get that and like having the right connections.
So did she see your work and just be like, hey, you got to start working on some of this stuff? Or how did that happen?
Yeah, I think she got my name from when I started working on that book, just like helping out on that book. And then
which one was that for the flats for what book was that?
It was for Disney's The Descendants graphic novel. So Kat Fajardo did the art for it and like some other people wrote it. I don't have it on hand.
Yeah, sure. Well, you did the flats. It doesn't sound like you were sure. Cool. How did the Marvel job happen? That was the Squirrel Girl. You did one or two pages, is that right?
Yeah, I did like a couple pages over a few different issues. I don't know how that happened. yeah, the editor just like emailed me and I did it and that's all.
I think that's a real testament to the strength of your work that you're getting a cold call from Marvel for Squirrel Girl. That was a moment we were talking off mic earlier about jealousy among ourselves, and that was a moment when I walked into the comic shop and flipped the book open and saw your stuff on the monthly page, and I was just like, this is so cool and I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I got to be in a book with Anders Nilsson and Garfield creator Jim Davis, which I forget about all the time, and it's super weird. Just like John Arbuckle, Silver Surfer, wearing shorts for some reason. Wonderful comic. Thank you, Jim Davis.
I forgot Anders was in there. That's cool, because you had classes from him, right?
Yeah, I had one class with him. He's a cool dude. He drew Wolverine shotgunning a beer with his claws, which I love. I think that's the best part of that, the zine issue of Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, so you were, what, you were just a couple of years out of MCAD then, so are taking classes from him, and then you're published alongside him within a couple of years.
Yeah, I guess that's cool.
You didn't really think about it like that before?
Yeah, I mean, like, I did that job, and then I was, like, also working at, like, a coffee chain and like getting up at 4 a.m. to like make lattes for people that did not like me and did not tip me very well.
Don't read comics and you're just working there like none of you guys read comics.
You went to art school. How's that working out for you? Which is the worst thing to hear from a customer. And I wish I could track all of them down right now and tell them like how I'm making a great living off of comics, but that's like really funny and weird, and I wouldn't do that.
I think we all feel that way, though. Definitely. We all just want to rub it in their faces. You're making it happen. It's worth being proud of, you know? So you are on the tail end of the graphic novel now, right? You're mostly working on edits, is that right?
Yeah, edits, like things like tweaking the cover, like working on chapter openers. So just like the last few things. And I've just like lost momentum, and I feel like I'm trying to wring out a dry towel to get like the last drops of something. Of like comics making juice. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, before the project is done. There's always that kind of, there's like a little bit of a, there's an excitement when you're finishing a project, but there's also that sort of nagging feeling of like, boy, I'm going to turn this thing in and then I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, then I have to like write another graphic novel and start working on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
I don't you know if the... I can do that right now. That's just a lot.
Does your contract stipulate that you really get moving on the next one right away, or can you take some breathing room?
I'm supposed to start on it. Like, traditional publishing, like, everything takes forever. And so it would be pretty flexible, like, if I wanted to move it back. But, like, if I push things back, I don't get paid as quickly also. So it's, like, up to me and, like, what I'm capable of doing, I guess. But yeah, I could definitely like push it back, I think, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, so you've had a little bit of time then, being on the tail end here to get a good feel. How many pages is upcoming one?
The Accursed Vampire is like 160 pages, I think.
Okay.
So it's like...
Yeah, so you've had some time to kind of reflect on what it feels like to draw, you know, 20 pages, 30 pages versus 160 pages. And this is the first time you've done a book of that length. So how has that transition been for you?
It's been interesting. I feel like it's so inconsistent looking. So I would like everyone when they read this book to like leave a month in between reading chapters because it's divided into 8 chapters. So just like leave some time and then so forget what it looks like and then read the next
chapter.
Yeah,
come back to it.
I don't know if it's really that bad, but it's definitely like things change if you're like drawing something for 4 months, like it's gonna look different. Well, maybe for me, it looks different.
I notice it. I definitely, as you get more comfortable with it, you know, you can design your characters as much as you want. But once you draw them 200 times for pages, you just start cartooning it a little different. You know, you just get your little tricks on it.
Yeah. And like Dragosova, the main character, they like I've been drawing them since 2016. And they look completely different now from like what they look like then. Like they used to have a neck, which I forgot about. And now they're just like, their head is a circle and their body is a triangle.
Yeah. Well, so when you say you've been drawing them since 2016, is that the Halloween comics? Where they, I'm assuming that's their first appearance, the trio.
The trio's first appearance was actually in this like, really short comic I made for a convention in like December of 2016. Like I first drew them like in the fall, and then Halloween Comics was the next year.
Okay, so yeah, and then Halloween Comics, that's the oldest version of them you have on your website then.
Yeah, I think I've gotten rid of everything else because I am not as confident about how it looks. Like I've just like the way I've drawn has changed.
Well, I read all of the stuff on your website and the first chapter of the new book, and I didn't notice it looking different. So I think I'm a pretty careful reader, so I think you're probably safe.
Well, cool. It's all in my head.
Well, you Once know, again. You spent so much time with them, right? Yeah, you spend so much time with them, and you start to see those details.
Yeah, and like the thing about these past few months in like... quarantine lockdown, like all I have to do is like look at my book and worry about my book and work on my book, and like it's been kind of efficient for finishing it because I haven't been like traveling because I normally go to conventions and do other things. But it's also like just like hyper focusing on it, which isn't super healthy all the time.
It's the way I do everything. I'm so hyper focused on it. I drive myself crazy.